What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Matthew in Manhattan. What's going on, Matthew?
Hey, I'm fired up about the Jets. I think they'll be one of the four teams to be excited about coming into October.
All right, so you think it's going to be the Jets. So, like, of all the four teams that we're talking about now, Mets, Yankees, Jets, Giants, you think in October we're going to be, the Jets will be the most positive story out of the four?
I think so, and I think that's all due to accountability and then the new head coach. He brings a fresh air. I think the players are going to be playing for him. And I like what I see. It's a new culture. None of this, Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas. It's
Matthew,
I've been a fan for so long.
I'll tell you this, and I hope you're right, and I do like what I've seen so far. There's no doubt. But it also does sound a lot like the way Joe Judge sounded when he came in. Accountability, going to be tough. You're going to do it my way. We're going to clean up this locker room. And it didn't work out so well for him. I do hope. Now, this is different. I do think it's different. We will see. The proof will be if they can win some games. But just because a guy comes in stern, coming off a coach who seemed like a player's coach, doesn't mean it's an automatic. That's all I would say.
And also, the thing that Aaron Glenn has going for him is, like, the what we've been talking about with expectations going into a season is that they could be a positive story with a losing record.
Agreed.
The Giants can't be, because unless Jackson Dart's playing early, but he's not going to be playing early.
But couldn't you, if the defense is good and they're just not winning because the offense isn't great and you got Jackson Dart in waiting, couldn't you see a similar scenario to where they're building something and they've got their quarterback in the future and waiting?
Well, not having seen him in regular season games, the answer would be no. The only way that I think that you could feel good about the Giants and where they're going with a losing record is if Jackson Dart is playing and playing well. But if they're losing games of Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and they can't score, even if their defense is good, then there's just nothing positive about that. This is also like a season. The way that John Mara spoke at the end of the year, set the tone for this season. And if they don't get significantly better, they're done. And then we have this whole situation that you try to avoid with a rookie quarterback where he's changing offenses.
Again.
Two different offenses in 2 years. So this is critical. I mean, this season and the Giants' success is also critical to the development of Jackson Dart.
No question. No question. Because the last thing you want to do is have the cycle repeat itself from what we've seen over the last 7-8 years. And that's been a major problem.
This is an interesting one. I almost want to do one of those polls, those Twitter polls, Fleegs. It's like, which team on October 10th, let's say,
most relevant?
Is the most relevant in New York out of those four? Right, as we try to predict.
I think you have to.
Hey, right now, I don't think the Mets or the Yankees are making the playoffs. As I sit here today on August 15th.
The Yankees will make the playoffs.
15th.
The Yankees will make the playoffs. I actually don't have the way, we were talking in the first hour about the Mets, and I actually feel like it's almost likely that they won't make it. The Yankees haven't played great. The Yankees have played better, though. And the Yankees did just win a series. The Yankees, Giancarlo Stanton has been good. There are things I can point to the Yankees that are at least positive. The Yankees will make the playoffs. I don't know about the Mets. I'm going to say the Yankees. I'm going to say on October 10th, the Yankees will still be the best story of the four. And I think the Giants have a chance to be right behind them.
Wow.
I hate that I'm saying this, but I do.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'll tell you right now, I think the Giants win week one.
You think they beat the Commanders?
I think they go to Washington and they beat the Commanders. I do. I don't know why, other than the fact that they've matched up well against them in the past, sure. I think year two for Jaden Daniels, a lot more tape on him, as good as he is. Last time I checked, the Terry McLaurin situation hasn't been resolved.
It hasn't, no.
Doesn't mean he won't be there week one, but as of now, he's not there. Dan Quinn year two, I think the Giants will win week one.
Okay. I mean, they're going to have to win one of those two, and obviously their success rate in Dallas isn't great. So October 10th would be game 5 of the ALDS. So that would mean that they have to get through. Well,
I think the Yankees are still playing.
All right.
And just because that would be the playoffs, unless the Giants or Jets are 5-0 or 6-0, then the Yankees would be the answer.
Yeah, I can't necessarily. It's going to be, it'll be one of the two, the Yankees or the Mets.
You're not buying the football teams.
I can't. How could you?
Because we can't do this again.
We can't do this again, and we always do it again.
No, I'm saying it now. Can't do it again.
We always do it again.
I can't do the warm-up show with Al again every Monday if these teams suck. I'm going to shoot myself.
But that's what it's been.
Not anymore. I say no more.
I mean, what are they, both 5.5 over-under win totals?
I get it. It's miserable, yes.
I mean, I think sometimes we forget like where these teams are in the pantheon of the NFL.
Which has been nowhere.
Yeah.
I know. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid and everything I'm reading and watching and seeing. I think the Giants are going to be good.
I mean, also think about, like, you know, the with the Jets, Aaron Glenn, like, learning curve stuff, too. Like, I remember last year in that game where they got whacked by the Commanders, the Lions, you know, they had all those issues, you know, too many men on the field and penalties and everything else. Like, he's all that stuff is new for him and everybody else.
And he could have trouble with the clock and his timeout situation and managing a game to get started. That is true. I mean, there is a learning curve. You got to give him a couple of weeks, but you would like to think he's got good people around him and he will figure it out. He does have, and this would be, I guess, to Matt, the caller's point, he does really seem to have a presence about himself where he seems like he is in total control of the situation.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he is, but that's how he carries himself. And if I was a Jet fan, I would feel relatively confident that I've got a guy at the top right now that at least looks like he knows what he's doing. Rob Saleh, you know, man, when he came here, you knew we thought we knew what we were getting. We thought we were getting one of these yes or rah-rah guy, but also a guy that was, you know, going to be very involved. And then when he was on the sidelines, he just looked like a different, as a head coach, looked like a different guy. I think what you see is what you're going to get out of Aaron Glenn. And I do think that the guys will play for him. It does seem like things have been different over there. And I don't think we will see as many of those issues that you bring up that a lot of first-time head coaches do have.
Pete Alonso, who is the Mets' new home run king, sustained power prowess for homegrown Pete Alonso, delivering last night 2 home runs to take that lead from Daryl Strawberry as the Mets' all-time home run leader. And we talk about it, you know, moving it forward. I just don't see, it's not just reacting to last night. It's reacting to the offseason, reacting to the big year Pete has had, the down year Vientos has had, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. coming off the board. There are a lot of reasons for it. The Mets, you know, having success this year with Pete being the primary reason for that success. I don't see how Steve Cohen, regardless of what David Stearns thinks, I don't see how Steve Cohen can let Pete Alonso walk at the end of the year.
Well, I don't see it that way, unfortunately. And, you know, you've heard this, the expression, when people show you who they are, believe them. I would take it a step further. When people show you what they're thinking, believe them. And to me, the thought process from a Mets organization perspective has been pretty clear. They like Pete. I don't know if they want to marry Pete, because if they wanted to marry Pete, they've had many opportunities to do so. Even though Pete turned down some contracts, I get that as well. And, you know, once that contract extension was turned down, whatever it was, 158 or 160, whatever the exact number was from Pete's perspective, it really set in a chain of events in motion that has complicated what should be so freaking easy. I mean, you draft the kid, I think it was second round. It was the first, I think it was second out of Florida. Whatever, you draft him very early. And he develops right away, and he rewards you right away. And he is low maintenance. He's a good guy. He's a big-time, prolific, prodigious home run hitter. He's got deficiencies. I get that. And I've talked about it as much as anybody. But that should have been a done deal years ago. And because it wasn't, for different reasons, I think it complicates it now. Sentiment will win out maybe to an extent, like it did a year ago, by him being brought back on February 12th, which is pretty late. It's not gonna win out to the point that Met fans are hoping in this, you know, 5-6 year commitment. Pete can retire, 500 bombs. I think it's gonna be a series of short commitments. Pete might get tired of that And if the production drops off, the Mets might say, we're good.
Yeah, we're going to see what the market is. I'm sure the Mets will let the market dictate things. I just feel like all this stuff, homegrown guy, the record, the potential chase of 500 down the road, I would think that that would be more appealing to certainly for the Mets fans, and Steve Cohen is going to listen to his fans. I just have a hard time thinking he's going to walk. Now, before we move on, and we're going to get back to your Alonso calls here, 888-808-1019. We should mention the Mets are going to be honoring Pete tonight with a special ceremony ahead of the game. Hoff, you said what time they got to be in their
640.
Seats? 640. So be in your seats at 640 ahead of the game tonight with the Mets and the Braves. Some football here. I don't know if you saw this little tidbit, and you're probably not going to like it.
Is this Malik Nabers or something with the Jets?
Something with the Jets.
Okay.
NFL Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
Real fast, how much do I have to brace for this?
I'd say maybe 50%. It could be a precursor.
Okay.
Sauce Gardner held out of practice today due to calf soreness. Team is still evaluating the injury.
I'm okay. I know why you say precursor, calf generally tied into the Achilles.
It's Sauce Gardner, dude. Like,
no, I understand.
I mean, a calf is a calf regardless, but...
I get that. Not as worried as you thought I would have been.
Okay.
You know,
and I'm not trying to make a bigger deal, but when you say he's held out of practice, calf soreness, you're right. I'm thinking calf, Achilles.
Calf strain. You know, I think this has been a much tougher camp under Aaron Glenn. A lot of hitting. Now, if he doesn't play Saturday, you know, I'm still not incredibly concerned. Here's my timeline. As I hear this news and process in real time.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm not worried at all. I mean, I wish there was no news on Sauce's calf strain, but not worried now. If he doesn't play Saturday, I'll be disappointed just because I want to watch him play against the Giants, right? If he's not practicing early next week, even if it's somewhat limited, which then tells me, all right, he's back on track and he's good, then I would be worried.
Brian Costello just tweeted, Aaron Glenn won't say if the starters will play Saturday. Quote, the plan is the plan. So Glenn is not committing to whether the starters are going to play or not.
Of course they're going to start.
On Saturday. Well, I mean, he's not committing to it. The plan is the plan. Okay, well, we'll see what that is. But yes, I mean, he's certainly, can't imagine Sauce is going to be playing on Saturday. If he's out of practice today with the calf strain, wouldn't you be? I'm all for playing the starters. But anybody that's got any kind of an issue whatsoever, yes. I would not play.
I totally agree. See, because think of it. There's multiple things that are at stake here. You know, both Jets and Giants, but specific to Sauce here with the Jets. You know, you got guys trying to make a team. They got to play, all right? You've got an offensive line that's trying to gel, which I think has a chance to, as I said many times, to be. I think the Jets' O-line could be top 10, and I think that could be a little conservative. If you told me at the end of the day the Jets have a top 7 O-line, I wouldn't say you're nuts. So you want them to get some meaningful reps when there's people in the stadium. That helps a little bit accelerate that development. But the other thing, too, is like when you want to get a culture going here, you can't bypass the little tiny steps that good organizations could. The Niners, doesn't matter what they do. Ravens, doesn't matter what they do. Eagles, doesn't matter what they do right now. It does matter what the Jets and the Giants still do during the summer. It does.
And I think Glenn's doing it the right way. I just would be... You know, like you said, you never want to have these injuries pop up. But, if it were an elbow, maybe even an ankle, I'd be like, all right, well, whatever. Sore ankle for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. The calf worries me. We saw this exact thing. I know Rodgers is different, older body. We've seen this with other players before.
Yep.
But with Rodgers, it was the calf at first. And then that obviously led to the blown Achilles. So, and we've seen the Achilles become such a frequent injury here.
7 in the NBA a year ago. 7.
That's what I mean. So yeah. I don't know what's going on, but that would have me concerned. A player that's going to be cutting as quickly as much as Sauce Gardner is, you know, and running all over the field now too, not just being tied to one side of the field defensively, and as important a player as Sauce Gardner is for the Jets defense, which is kind of getting overlooked a little bit because I think everybody's focusing on the offensive line, running the football, Justin Fields, Aaron Glenn. We don't talk about the Jets defense as much, certainly as we have the last several years. Sauce is a huge part of that.
He is, and I thought he was awful a year ago, certainly by his standards. I thought he was not locked in. I thought he was soft, and that's why I was calling him Soft Gardner.
Yeah, I was.
But I think that he is a supremely, basically like all-time gifted player. You needed the right guy here. Now he's a little bit light, so he's never going to be an elite tackler. But at least he's got to be a willing tackler, which you saw a little snippet against Green Bay. He threw his pads and he threw his body around a little bit. You know, it's funny, too, because the... So, I agree. He's great, and I think that the Jets' defense could be fantastic this year. Whether it's Sherwood, whether it's Quincy, whether it's Q, I mean, whether it's... I'm just in baseball mode, so I'm not even thinking of all the names right now. You get Jermaine Johnson back. I mean, the Jets' defense could be very, very, very good. But I do think with this rash of Achilles injuries, like the Achilles used to be an old man's. That's it. The old man injury, playing Sunday basketball pickup, or the 37-year-old NBA player hanging on by a thread or whatever it might be. It's, I don't know what it is. Somebody needs to do a much more specific study, a real deep dive, because the Achilles injuries, it's not quite an epidemic, but it is very different than it used to be.
So not reason to panic yet.
No.
Concern as it pertains to Jets to the Jets and Sauce Gardner. By the way, we did the three random questions before. In case you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. Three random questions is sponsored by the Rothenberg Law Firm. Injured? Visit injurylawyer.com. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Back to the Pete Alonso stuff. Ralph is in Manhattan. What's up, Ralph?
You know, I hate golf too, Sal. and you know something? I've tried to enjoy playing golf the 4 or 5 times I've been on the course. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And Francesa is surprisingly a good golfer. I mean, he shocked me how he can swing on a golf course, but nevertheless.
What did he shoot? I mean, if you're shooting a 119 and Mike's shooting a 101, Mike's better than you,
no,
but is Mike
just,
good?
No, I wasn't playing with him. Yeah. I just watched him play. Also on a base.
Wait,
where'd
you watch him play?
Was he on TV?
Long time ago. It had to be about 20 years ago, maybe. But as far as dog goes, dog is a different story on a baseball field. But Francesa could play baseball, too.
Yep.
I'll give you this situation on Pete. This is my take. You know, take it for what it's worth. There's something that the Mets don't take to with this guy. There's something surprisingly off with this guy, I think, that the Mets see that we don't see. You know, behind the scenes, whether it's happening in the clubhouse, it's happening, maybe it's his shape, maybe it's his, the modern-day ball player does not necessarily appear as Alonso does. But you have to remember about baseball. There have been some misshapen baseball players that have been excellent baseball players. You have a guy that lumbering around, that can't, you know, they're fat, whatever they're doing there, they can still play that game. And Pete's that guy. Pete is that guy. Every time somebody calls this radio station, guys, they have nothing but glowing they speak in glowing terms of this guy, and they love this guy. There's something that the Mets brass does not see that we obviously see.
That's all that matters, what they think.
And thanks for the call, Ralph. But that's not necessarily true.
In terms of a contract.
No, I know. But he's saying that everybody speaks glowingly of him, and there's something that everybody sees that the brass don't. I also watch Pete Alonso. Like, he's not a great athlete.
No.
He's face planting all over the field. Like, if you want to paint the negative picture, it's very easy. He can't throw the baseball.
Nah, that's his biggest weakness. He cannot throw it all.
Belly flopping. Now, he's done a great, great job of improving his defense to where it's become more than serviceable. You mentioned the scoops before. Yep. He's the best at that. He was metrically, I think, the best at that a year ago.
He was.
He might still be. At the very least, he's one of the best at scooping the baseball at first base. However, his footwork's not very good. His glove is, I'd say, you know, outside of the scoops, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But his arm is way below average. He's not a great runner, obviously, but that's not what he's supposed to be. He's not supposed to be a great athlete. He's supposed to be a power hitter, and that is what he is great at. There is no knock, even in a down year, with Pete Alonso's power. The issue the last couple of years was, one, the significant dip in average to go from a 270 roughly hitter to a 217 hitter is a significant drop. And then the other thing would be last year, even though the power numbers were there, it wasn't the impact that he's had this year. With fewer home runs so far this year, he's had far greater impact with those home runs than he had in his 34 home runs a year ago.
Okay, so when you talk about the defense and some other stuff, I do like to just back it up a little bit. We know what our eyes tell us here. So in terms of base running value this year, he's in the 13th percentile. In terms of fielding run value, he's in the 35th percentile. In terms of arm strength, he's in the 6th percentile. In terms of range, he's in the 21st percentile. And in terms of sprint speed, he's in the 11th percentile. So if this was 1980-something, I mean, Pete would have had a 6-7-year deal. He's going to retire a Met.
Right.
The game's gotten quicker, which means the analysis of the game has expanded. it's become much more intelligent, the ability to quantify not only strengths but weaknesses. And Pete has some very discernible weaknesses. His greatest strength is prolific all-time power. Is that enough to keep him here for 15 years? I don't think it is, based on what the Mets have basically told us without telling us, meaning contract negotiations. But, I mean, could anything change? Sure. I don't think it will.
Ralph is calling from Howard Beach. What's up, Ralph?
Ralph, what's going on, buddy?
All right, Ralph is not there. Maurice is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. What's up, Maurice?
Hey, glad to hear your gales again. Always calling back. So just on Pete Alonso itself, man, I was just looking up his stats. His availability is always there. He's 96% 2019. He's third in home runs, first in RBIs. I think the only caveat is that what is Scott Boras going to do? Is Pete going to lead the negotiation or Boras is? And Boras is going to have to, I think he's got
his agent. What do you mean? You don't hire an agent to then all of a sudden you lead the negotiations. His agent's going to be doing it.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that Boras is going to make sure that he gets back if he didn't get what he wanted. And, you know, Boras, he's always going for that money. That's why I think Pete might just take the money and run.
Right, but there was no money to be found, Maurice, and thank you for the call elsewhere. That's the question here. They were going to do the same thing a year ago. Now, should it be easier, theoretically, coming off a better year for Pete? He's a year older.
That could neutralize the uptick in average.
But he's had a better year.
Yeah.
And by the way, Pete didn't get an awful deal according to what the market was saying. Like, he could value himself certain thing. We kind of went what the market was going to be last year. He still was the highest paid first baseman in the league on the AAV.
Mm-hmm.
He might still be able to get that, but he's not going to get that for 5-6 years.
There's no way.
Okay, so that's the thing. So what's going to change? Boras is still the agent. If Pete wants to be here and they want to continue to play on deals like this, I think the Mets would be fine with that. The question is going to become, if there is one team that says, we'll commit to you 4 years, $35 million a year,
yep,
or 5 years, $30 million a year, whatever that is, would the Mets be willing to match that? I believe they will, with Steve Cohen trumping David Stern's thoughts on it.
I would think, I don't know this for sure, I would think the impending impasse that's staring at us from a baseball lockout or strike perspective, I don't know how that's going to impact the, I mean, it's not going to be good, that's obvious, but I would think that that would rule out some teams who might be like, all right, maybe we do give Pete X, Y, and Z. I think anybody that's going to be in play for Pete is going to just be a big boy. Yeah. Like, you know, top five, top six payrolls. I don't see somebody coming out of the weeds and doing, because there's just a lot of financial calculations that you need to use. And it's very hard to do because baseball is going to be broken in 2 years.
So Alonso's going to opt out, because if he did opt in, he would get himself $24 million just for next year.
Correct.
So he's starting with that baseline of opt out, and I'm going to get more than the $24
million. 100%.
But the question is going to be how, like, I would think he wants more guaranteed on the back end than another prove-it deal, especially as you get older. So he's going to be looking for at least 3 years minimum, $30 million a year. And I like, that's not a lot, I don't think, to ask.
I wouldn't crush the Mets if it's three years, 90 million.
Okay,
no.
So say 3 years, 100 or whatever. Like, that's not a big deal.
Yeah. I just think, like, when we start talking about 500 home runs, you know, he's not going to hit 100 home runs the rest of the year.
I know.
Like, that's where we got to get some separation from the reality of where he is statistically.
He said he wants to play till 40.
Oh, that's for him. That appears to me to be physically very unlikely.
But why not? Why can't he just be a DH that's going to hit home runs?
What is he going to look like when he's 40?
I think the same, probably.
I don't think. I mean, that's just my opinion. I don't think he's going to age well at all.
All right, but even if he, like, forget about, you're just talking about getting up in the batter's box and hitting. Like, Giancarlo Stanton, we could have looked at his body years ago and said, well, how's this guy going to age? He looks like a Greek specimen, Greek god, physical specimen.
Yeah.
And yet he can't play. And give him credit, by the way, for playing the outfield.
He's playing great right now, by the way.
Saying, broken down body, I know what you mean. Never stay healthy.
Yeah.
All right, so, but he's a DH that's going to hit with power. I don't think. First of all, I don't like Pete playing first base now, let alone 3, 5, 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't believe that he's going to decline that much to where he can't be a 20 or so home run guy at age 37, 38.
That seems too deep into his 30s for me. Okay. I could be wrong. I mean, honestly, none of us know the answer. I could be wrong. If I'm Stearns, there's no way in hell I'm signing up for that. You know, the one thing, and again, I don't know how this impacted last February 12th, the offer, the done deal, boom. Like, there was a lot of, come on, he's on the precipice of becoming the all-time Mets home run leader. How are you going to let this guy walk? Well, now he is. Now, maybe that makes it even more like, well, yeah. Now you're going to let him walk? But, again, 500 home runs is a long ways away. So there's, I don't think there's any contract presentation, if there is, and there will be something, from the Mets to him, that's going to even give him a chance to get to 500. So no matter what, we're back at this spot at some point again, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, if you're talking about specifically 500, maybe. I do think, though, the time to cut ties with Alonso would have been last year. As difficult as it was after the postseason, it was only the postseason, a few home runs in the postseason,
yep.
that changed the entire thought process. That would have been easier to me for Cohen and Stearns to rip the Band-Aid off and say, we're going to move on. Plus, you had Vientos in waiting, or the idea of Vlad Guerrero Jr. Like, it was easier to me to accept from a Met fan perspective that they could have moved on and understand it last year. I cannot now understand that, especially after, you know, the homegrown stuff and the record last night and the year that he's had more.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Particular.
And this is where I guess I'll be sort of anti-Jet, because I think I was pretty positive in the open talking about what I think this team can do. They have two questions this year. A, I want to see them win games. I'd like to see them break the playoff drought. And B, what's Justin Fields? They got a lottery ticket on him. Can he be the future quarterback? There is a scenario, and I kind of described it, where the Jets are good, the Jets win games, and Justin Fields is not a franchise quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's there for the ride. And what becomes difficult is finding a franchise quarterback while you're winning 7, 8, 9 games, because you're not picking at the top of the draft. Right. And that's where I bring this back to the decision the Jets made to not draft Shedeur Sanders. Because I made the point in the days leading up to it that, hey, if he's there, I'd consider him in the first round. If somehow he fell to the second round, which I don't think any of us really thought was going to happen, I would have thought him about him there too.
Yeah.
And it would have been perfect, especially when you look at the Jet quarterback room right now, to say, wow, it would have been kind of cool to have him sit there behind Justin Fields. I'm not saying that because Tyrod Taylor got hurt. I'm saying it because they're looking for a franchise quarterback, I assume, unless Justin Fields proves to be the answer. And they could have drafted this guy with incredible value. Now, I'm not trying to bury Brady Cook, who looked pretty good in the preseason. But the odds are ain't the answer either.
Well, Brady Cook's also a college free agent, and it's really hard to escape your draft situation or lack thereof. And so while he may play well, unless it is a Brock Purdy type ascension, given whatever opportunity he's given, you're likely looking for a quarterback.
That's all I'm saying. It's likely. I don't want to bury the kid. So I think if we're sitting here a year or two from now talking about Shedeur became a star and almost complaining about who passed on him, I think as a Jet fan, I'll complain louder than you guys.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. Because, well, while next year's draft class, and it's way too early to look at these things, even though we are hearing that Arch Manning from his father or his grandfather is not going to come out in the 2026 draft, there's a lot of quarterbacks in the next year's draft. And we don't know what they're ultimately going to be graded like and where they're going to be ranked in relative to the entirety of the draft. But you knew that Shedeur Sanders was a gamer. Whether you liked his attitude or hated it or whatever your opinion was of Shedeur Sanders, he's a good ball player. And even if you needed to develop him, you had it because you had Justin Fields already.
It would have been perfect.
It would have been perfect. Now, if you end up winning too many games and you're back into the draft, that's when it really gets dicey if Justin Fields isn't the guy.
888-808-1019, the number. Corey is in Massapequa Park. Good afternoon to you, Corey.
What's up, Corey?
Hey, good afternoon. How you guys doing?
Wonderful. What's on your mind, man?
I just rounding out the Giants-Jets talk, two points. One with the Giants, just kind of as a side note, I do feel really good after the first game, not so much because of the game. I think it's more the Giants just getting back to their identity, right? You hear that a lot,
right. But
Keith mentioned O-line play, even the running backs, right? I mean, obviously we know Tracy as like the slasher, but you have Scatterboos, you know, a friggin' nail gun out there. And I mean, we haven't seen him, but known his potential and some of the grit. So, you know, with the Jets Giants, I'm biased, but I'm going Giants way more than the Jets this year. But my point for the call was really on the strength of schedule. I think one of the flaws of all New York teams, and it's a gift and a curse, is that I feel like we really play to the level of our competition. Just see it all the time, right? We lose to teams that we shouldn't lose.
True.
Sometimes, you know, we beat teams that we shouldn't beat. And for me, knowing that we're kind of at the lowest in my lifetime that I've seen as a Giants fan, to have the difficult strength of schedule, I feel like might bring out the best in the boys and really give us the opportunity to, you know, feel like we have to show something and can't take any days off. So I'm using it as a rallying cry to really bring the best for the season.
I mean, it's a good way to think about it. You rise to the occasion, and you know you're not taking anything for granted. There's no complacency in how you're playing, which might be an issue with one of the New York teams in this town that's playing right now. It'd be the New York Yankees. It feels complacent sometimes. But I don't think the Giants can afford that. I don't think the coaching staff would allow it. Now, we're not going to sit here and have hot seat conversations, but it is kind of a go or go home moment for this staff right now. And there's an enthusiasm, there's an energy, there's a purpose. What it feels like is permeating the clubhouse or the locker room or the organization over there. And so I don't think complacency is ever going to be a part of this Giants team this year. They're not good enough to be at that level.
I understand that at the end of this season, the Giants could go 5-12. We're going to look at the growth of the roster. We're going to see Jackson Dart play a few games at the end of the year and say, hey, I feel good about the team. I'm not arguing with that. Mm-hmm. You have every right to feel that way. What I'm saying on August 12th is, who the hell is going to win more games? And who you play matters.
Yeah, I mean,
it just does. It's not the end-all, be-all. I get it. A team on your schedule, like the Chargers week 4, may not be as good as we think now in August. I acknowledge that. And it goes both ways. A team like the Saints, who both teams play, well, the Saints are supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league. Maybe they stun us. It goes both ways. So when you say, yeah, strength of schedule, it's a hard schedule, that's good for us. No, it's not, because you want to win games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know about you, I'm not debating who's going to feel better in January. I'm saying who's going to win more games.
How the hell are the Jets winning games with their schedule?
I'll tell you how. The Pittsburgh Steelers are overrated. That's a win. They'll probably lose to Buffalo. I don't know how good the Buccaneers are. I mean, I don't think the Dolphins
the Bucks,
are any good.
The Bucs didn't get worse.
I didn't say they got worse.
And those are 2 1:00 games in Florida back-to-back before two is probably hurt.
What the hell? First of all, they're in Miami, and it's a Monday Night Football game.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry.
Not a 1 o'clock
game. I missed
game.
That one. Tampa's 1 o'clock.
So get your schedule out of your ass. That's number one.
Either way, if that's pre a Tua injury, you're winning that game?
First of all, I don't know when Tua is going to be healthy. And even if Tua is healthy, I don't think the Dolphins are that good.
Denver, Cincinnati, you're winning those games?
Yeah, I think your schedule is more difficult. Significantly more.
Well, look, I don't think it's also difficult.
That's my point. Nobody's arguing the Giants' difficulty. Nobody's bringing up the Jets' difficulty.
They have the 21st most difficult schedule in the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's where they're ranked. Now, I agree, as I've said many times, that can change based on opponents and if they're better or worse than we think. But as of right now, you could scream into the shadows all you want. The Giants have the toughest schedule. The Jets have the 21st toughest schedule. That's just the facts.
Right. But that's based on also expectations for all the teams on these respective schedules.
I agree, and that can absolutely
flip. Which is why
flip.
You can't even really look at it. You can't judge it on what the predictions are.
No, I think you can, because I think that we have knowledge base of what we think teams are going to be. Now, some of our opinions alter, like, I don't think Miami's any good. I think the Steelers are going to fall flat on their face. You guys don't have to necessarily agree with that, but in my opinion, that's what I think is going to happen. You play the Patriots once, we play them twice. I've said this to you a few times. I think they're the most overrated team going into the start of the season. Everyone is taking turns.
They're getting a head coach lift.
Kissing ass to Mike Vrabel.
Well, they're getting a head coach lift.
I got it. Okay, great. How good is Drake May? Do we know?
I mean,
who are skill position players? Why don't you go through that list? Anyone want to go through that?
No.
You wouldn't rather start the year with Drake May than Justin Fields?
That's not what this is about. I'm talking about if I think the Patriots are any good. I mean, you're bringing it all back to them.
Give me the Jets skill position guys, especially a wide receiver.
Well, let's start with a guy who's a top 10 wide receiver in the league in Garrett Wilson.
Outside of Garrett Wilson.
Well, no, not outside. He's a number one receiver. Do the Patriots have that?
They have Stephon Diggs, who was a number one receiver.
Keyword was.
He's got a number one girlfriend. I mean, does that count?
He doesn't.
Wait, are they still? I thought they broke up. I'm confused, actually.
It's complicated. But as far as I know, they are still together.
I think it was always complicated, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think that was ever not complicated.
Exactly.
I mean, that's amazing. It's already a couple of years now where we've done this. Going back to the what the hell were we? The Doink and Goldust and What were we this year? I was a Brother Love, and Sal
I was Papa
was,
Shango.
You were, yes. You pulled it off.
I did.
I looked weird. First of all, I had the wrong red. My hair looked awful. It's hard to get slicked back hair, so I tried.
Well, especially when you don't have any hair.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. A little NFL talk on The Fan, brought to you by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Can't wait. Visit ParamountPlus.com today /NFL to get started today. Now, not the biggest of deals. Number one, he's not the starter. And number two, I don't think it's incredibly, it's not long term. You know, unlike like when Zach Wilson was here and how paramount it was to make sure you had a veteran starter behind him, not that they did a really good job with that either, but that was one of the talking points. All right, so Tyrod Taylor, as you guys know, if you're a Jets fan, had his knee sculpt, and he's obviously out the rest of preseason. They deem it, quote, hopefully ready for week one. I mean, listen, obviously the season doesn't hinge on the availability of Tyrod Taylor. However, I'm very curious to see where this goes. You know, Justin Fields does run a lot, which means he's putting himself in harm's way of oncoming defenders. But, you know, C.J. Beathard and Nathan Peterman are the two guys that worked out. I'm not knocking the Jets process here, but that just tells you, like, it's slim pickings. I mean, some teams don't have a good starter. The Jets are going to find a good backup just in case Tyrod's not ready. No, that's not realistic here. So you got to hope that, you know, the prognosis here is on the money and that he's ready for week one. And even if he's 50-50, maybe you roll the dice and Fields plays the whole game and then he's ready for week two, God forbid, if you need him. But, you know, I'm curious if anybody's going to get cut over the next week or two that would be of interest to the Jets here. And you say Jameis. Oh, that's right. You did say that. Good job. Now, I said a while ago, that's a good call, Rami, where if I'm the Giants, just to get them into it for a sec, well, you know, obviously Russell's the starter. And if Jackson Dart distinguishes himself the way he has, at least so far, and continues to play well and doesn't look overwhelmed, and the Giants, not me, the Giants, are comfortable with him being the number two, well, at that point, you just got to cut Jameis Winston and say, hey, Jameis, we're going to do right by you. Go find the situation that's good for you. And I think that they would probably do that because it makes no sense. I don't want to see Jackson Dart play this year unless maybe it's like, you know, Giants are getting mopped and you give him a series and you hand it off a few times just to get his feet wet, get in a stadium, get on a, you know, feel the speed, feel the spotlight. Or even if the Giants are having either a really good or a really bad season, and it's at the end of the year, you know, you let him mop up second half, or even give him a start, throw him a bone at the end of the year. But I don't really need to see him play this year. But I do need to get him some reps in practice. And my point's always been, if Jameis is number two and Jackson's number three, what valuable repage, if you will, is he really going to get as Russell, the starter's getting ready for whomever they're playing week to week? Jameis is the backup. And then Dart. I mean, you're getting a scrap. You're getting film, sure, okay. But you got to get some live bullets. Not that you're going to get hit during, I mean, unless you're the Bengals and you're hitting Joe Burrow like a bunch of idiots. That was crazy. By the way, Joe Burrow, did you see the video of Burrow? See, this is what bothers me about some of these guys. Joe Burrow strikes me as, I want to say weird. That's not fair. But definitely, and he's amazing, not really the kind of quarterback vibe that I'm looking for. I want a geek. I want a guy who's just immersed in film, no social media nonsense, not looking to be Hollywood, not walking around with blonde hair when he's not blonde, and wacky suits when he walks into the stadium. I want Peyton. I want Eli. I want Tom. Those are the guys that I want. I want Mahomes. And the other night, and that was late, so I'm sure he was drunk, but that's no excuse. He's walking out of a club or a bar. It's like 2-something in the morning. I don't know if they were kids, but they were younger. And they approached him for an autograph, and he was a complete ass to him. I understand that, you know, what's caught on camera, or you have one bad moment. You know, I hate to keep referencing this, but I've coached 400 games. I get thrown out of one. Everybody thinks I'm a tyrant. No. I've had 399 games where I was incredibly well-intentioned. Actually, 400. I just had a moment that was not great, and I'm not proud of. But the point being, if we're going to judge everybody by a moment that's not optimal, then that's not really fair. So I'm not looking to do that. But, Yeah, I've even watched the Netflix series with Joe. He is amazing, but he's got a little bit of a diva-ish guy, vibe that the best quarterbacks usually don't have. But anyway, just to wrap it up with the football stuff, we'll see if anybody shakes free. I don't even know if they're going to need him. Tyrod very well might be ready for week one, but we'll see. All right, let's get back to you guys here. James in North Arlington, New Jersey. What's up, James?
Well, thank you for taking my call. This is a great topic, especially when, I keep talking about the Mets and the Yankees. Well, my son, he starts swimming in fifth grade, and he joined two club teams. Mm-hmm. And then he did okay at the club level. Then he swam the private Catholic. He did all right. But then when he saw his ability was pretty good, but he realized, and Daddy was very realistic, but he realized when younger people started beating him, like even though he was on the varsity, he saw how good some other swimmers were. Mm-hmm. He said, it was great swimming in high school. I'm going to find a good college to go to. He went to Vermont, and he's really enjoying up there in Vermont. He's learned how to snowboard. But he never regretted swimming, but he also knew he wasn't going to make the Olympics. And I think sometimes parents try to convince the kid that he's better than he is, and you can't be any worse than that. And I like what you're talking about, because you have to let the kid be as good as he can be, but then you can't make believe or try to convince him that he's going to be in the Olympics.
Man, I think you hit on something really good there, James, and thanks for the call. I mean, listen, you know, a lot of kids, which is another issue that I'm not going to start preaching about now, but too many kids who are young have phones. And what are you doing? I mean, you do what you got to do, but we're not doing that yet in our house. And there's enough things you got to worry about with school and this and that. So, because when you're on a phone, invariably, you see things you shouldn't see. I'm just not a big believer in that. So, before they need to have it. But you see some of these presentations for, and I'm not saying I never do it. Like the other day, my son was at Yankee Stadium with three of his buddies, right? They had a clinic. And you know, Aaron Boone came out and Cruz was there. And they were on the field and they were hitting. And they weren't hitting on the dirt, and they're young, so they're not coming. They were close to a home run, but they had like a tee up, and they were doing like different three 20-minute sessions. Like, so one was throwing, one was fielding, one was hitting. And on the hitting one, it was a tee, and it was like behind second base on the grass, and the tee was pointing towards center field. And, you know, the kids could, if you can reach, you know, you knock them in the seats, have a little fun. Yeah, of course, I put that on Facebook. It's a good thing. But a lot of parents make their children seem really as if they are the next Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Tiger, whatever, the Shambo, whatever sport, Mike Trout, Ohtani, Judge. And the ultimate barometer is, yo, you're going to get on a field, and no matter what mommy or daddy tweets or posts or says or thinks, you're either going to sink or you're going to swim. On your own volition, you're either good enough or you're not. Now, the other thing, too, and this came up a few times, like, and this is a personal preference thing. So, and I can only use myself as an example, like, okay, so I was good enough to play at Marist, not good enough to be really good, but good enough to play D1, whatever. But say if I wasn't good enough to play D1, and D1's a big commitment, you know, off-season lifting and getting up early and running and study hall and 58 games, I loved it. Wish I could be there forever, you know, I just couldn't. But if I wasn't good enough to, say, play at a Marist or a Siena or a Wagner, I'm thinking of other D1 schools in the area, somewhat an FDU, like that kind of count, St. Peter's, that was kind of I wasn't good enough to play above that, is my point. But if I was, like, say if I had a D2 school that wanted me to play and the academics matched where I was at that point, I understand why, and I get this, and it doesn't resonate with me because I was the exact opposite. I played until they basically took the bat and the ball and the uniform away from me. I just loved it so much. But some kids don't, and I do get this, which wasn't me. I'm going to go to Clemson, like all-county soccer. My wife, this actually applied to. Great soccer player in Texas, right? But you went to Alabama because you want to go to a big school. She could have gone to other schools and played soccer in college. She didn't want to because they weren't big schools. So if you have like a very good academic school that's D2, D3, you know, 3,500 students, 4,000, smaller school, liberal arts, beautiful campus, and you're getting a chance to play D2 or D3, some kids just don't want to make that commitment, and which I don't get, but I do get. Like, I get it conceptually, I just don't get it for me. I wasn't wired that way. All right, I'm not going to donate all or designate all this time for something where it's not even D1. I get that, But then there are others who just want to play, like me, until you can't play anymore. I get it. I get it. And at that point, obviously, the young, you know, male or female high school senior is of their own mind, and you've got to let them make the decision. I was on my golf trip last week. Personal example, not about me and my buddy Mitch, right? Down in Virginia. Daughter, phenomenal field hockey player. And there was a thought that, like, she went to the Indiana camp. She was invited to go Big Ten, all right? Not good enough to get a full ride, not even good enough to get an absolute scholarship, like preferred walk-on, you guys know. And that means sometimes good and sometimes bad. But she didn't really want to do it. But she's a great student, like her dad and mom. And she's looking at very other, like, much smaller schools. And she's not going to play. And I get it, you know, and I'm sitting there and we're, you know, on the deck and we're having beers. I'm like, man, aren't you going to miss it? Like, man, I like have a chance to play. He's like, yeah, of course I'm going to miss watching her, but I get it. She doesn't want to play anymore. The kid's going to know. Just like they're going to know if they're good enough. But there's just it's just crazy. And if you're saying, what are you talking about? This is all from the Little League World Series that, you know, even Howie jumped in. Kid last night for Taipei was throwing 82, which led to the, you know, the isolation of specialization and isolation of sports and pushing too hard and all that stuff. So that's what we...
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I was in Steelers camp last week, to be honest.
Right.
And Jalen Ramsey looks good. You know who also looks good?
Who?
Aaron Rodgers.
Does he?
Chris.
Listen, you're talking to the guy.
Hey.
I spent a month of overnight spinning the wheel of quarterbacks, Chris, complaining about the Jets not bringing back Aaron Rodgers.
You know who else looks, like, when I mean looks good, like, no look dimes. I'm talking about moving out, like, scrambling, like looks like he can, like, I know he didn't lose any weight.
Yeah.
But he looks mobile. Looks like, I mean, he's not 2000 and, like, MVP mobile.
Yeah.
But for a guy his age, looks mobile. You wouldn't even thought he had any Achilles injury.
Really?
And so I was sitting there, and it was just like, as I'm standing there on the practice field, I'm saying to myself,
yeah,
like, I'm not trying to curse on air, like, the Jets.
Yeah. No,
you know what I mean?
It's almost like it takes a full season before you can come back from Achilles.
I tore my Achilles. It took me a full year.
I mean, it's weird how that works.
I tore my Achilles. It took me a full year to get back to me being myself on the football.
Yeah, I think that, and that's why I'm frustrated by what they're doing. Look, I'm not in the, I don't know what he's asking for. I don't know all the details, but they went and get Aaron Rodgers. They make moves like Ramsey. It feels like they've been fed up with the same old, same old. They're trying to be bold inside a division that's very difficult, obviously, with some great quarterback play. Like, I think they're as fascinating a team, and I'm frustrated they would not just make sure they have their best team and pay this guy. But, like, to your point about Aaron Rodgers, like, that's why, like, for me, with Aaron Glenn here, I understand culture is difficult, but if you're gonna be the culture guy, then bring in guys that make culture difficult and fix the culture and have a quarterback who, you can't tell me Justin Fields is better. Can he stay healthier? Okay. Can he do different things in the running game and be a different type of quarterback? Okay. And maybe that's what you're looking for. But now you just sent me off on a whole other tangent with Aaron Rodgers.
No, I'm being honest. I'm just telling you what
I know,
I've seen.
But, I mean,
I'm just telling you what I was. I
can
was
you
just...
imagine if he comes in week one and lights up the Jets and takes Pittsburgh to the top of that division along with Baltimore and Cincinnati? I mean, that would be, you want to talk about the Jets in absolute misery. That is misery.
It's impossible. I'll just tell you as of right now, the man looks good. I'm just being honest.
And we should have had this conversation before the show started.
And I'm glad I'm not the only one that feels that way. I think Ryan Clark was in camp.
Yeah.
He reported the same thing. Like, multiple reporters, like, the guy, you know, I know Jets fans can't wait to boo the paint off his helmet week one. Get that. But you're not going to see what we saw last year.
You feel really confident in that.
I'm just telling you what I saw. Now, you know, whatever happens, happens. But, I mean, the man looks...
Well, he's got to stay healthy. We all understand
that.
And last year, it wasn't even just a major injury. He had problems playing through any sort of...
Well,
anything that was hampering him cost him significant play on the field. You saw it.
He needed, man that was dealing with four injuries, I mean, between the Achilles, the knee, the hip, and the ankle.
Right.
Like, those are all things he was dealing with, still trying to keep this team afloat.
Yeah.
And Valley, it was a circus, right? A lot of things happened.
Of course.
Well, everything's well documented. But I think having the fact, being now that he's healthy, and he's with a ball club where he doesn't have to be the coach, where, you know, it speaks to a lot of when you step into the organization and you're not there to reset a culture. You're just simply there to play quarterback.
Yeah.
And he's in Pittsburgh simply to play quarterback.
Yeah.
Because everything's set in place.
Yeah.
Coach, front office, the people around the building, how they go about their business is already like, no, this is, it's already, it's a machine.
Yeah.
So now he just can just play quarterback and not be asked to, you know, there's a young quarterback in that room by the name of Will Howard who's at Ohio State.
Sure.
He's not asked to mentor Will Howard. He's wanting to do that. He wants to pass on that oral history. But overall, man, you could tell he's just in a different place.
Yeah. No, I think that's such a good point because when he came here, it wasn't even, you're right, it wasn't just to play quarterback. It was to lift the New York Jets organization. I mean,
we would treat him like Gandalf. We were treating Aaron Rodgers like Gandalf, man, like save us.
You are just hitting it. You're wrestling. You're Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings guy, man. We should go do ayahuasca together. Like, this is amazing. But yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. He came here like that, and it felt like. And I don't want to I guess we're doing it when he ran out of that tunnel on 9/11 with
one
American flag.
One of the most iconic times in New York history.
There's no doubt. Like, it gave me, and I'm not Sports a Jet fan, but it gave me goosebumps, man. That was an amazing moment. And to have it, you know, four plays into it end, but, like, that's what it was. He was running out of the tunnel to carry the Jets.
Jets fans were going nuts. They were throwing Gabagool in the air. They were ripping over the Jets jackets. Gandolfini was popping up on the screen.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just like in Jet heaven when that man ran out that tunnel.
I know.
Four plays in, it felt like somebody pulled the extension cord out of all of New York City.
Brutal. And if 2 years later he does that for you can't even say floundering Pittsburgh team, but a team that's kind of, you know, gotten
deficient at the quarterback position ever since Ben Roethlisberger.
Absolutely. If he fully recovers from that injury and does what he was supposed to do for the Jets for Pittsburgh and starts that campaign against the Jets, I mean, it's hard not to feel like a team is cursed. Forget everything I said in the open. It's hard not to feel like a team is cursed.
Same old Jets.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, That is tough. That is tough. But you're right. He was brought here to do more than just play quarterback. And now he can go there with Mike Tomlin and that Pittsburgh team. And it feels like they're going for it. Like, it feels like they're, for the first time, they're not steady. We'll be fine. Our culture and our coach and just how we play football in Pittsburgh will carry us to some level of success. It's like, let's make moves to see if we can go win something here.
Well, I think it's two things. I think one, if you look at the back half of that season, those five games where they played the big dogs in the NFL, meaning the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the Eagles, and then they crawled into the playoffs against Baltimore and got dog walked. They realized they didn't have enough, and they were deficient mostly at that position.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what killed Russell Wilson. He, you know, their best guy beat the hell out of our guy. And Russell was, you know, the resume and everything that comes along with him couldn't keep up with the Joe Burrows or the Patrick Mahomes or the Jalen Hurts of the world. So they realized they had to make a change. On top of that, they needed more firepower.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
we got their slop, and they got Aaron Rodgers.
Well,
it's fantastic.
I don't want to put it like that. I mean,
we got the guys who couldn't do it, and now Aaron Rodgers looks as good as he's looked since his MVP season, not me, Willie Colon, and they're about to go on a run here.
This is practice. I'm just talking about how he looked in practice. He looked damn good in practice.
I'm sure he did. That is going to be something to watch, man. We talked yesterday about Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart and kind of them being like the
always
New York
tied
Jet,
to each
all
other.
Kind of tied to each other. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, but it feels like that. For the New York Giants but Aaron Rodgers and connected to the Jets.
And quickly, before I know we got to push along, if you're a Jets fan, you still have to be optimistic with what you saw Saturday.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
A really good offensive line, a really good young offensive line. We have a run game. I think Breland Allen is maybe the lead horse right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's documented, but I think out of the three running backs, he's played the best.
Yeah.
He played the best Saturday. And you have a defense that looks strong. I thought Sauce looked good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think there's a lot of optimism. There's a lot of high notes. It's just a matter of how long can they make.
No,
a high,
listen, I, and I feel that optimism. I do. I feel it for both football teams on a fairly high level. I don't know what optimism.
Let's go to the break.
I don't know what optimism for the New York Giants is, but I do feel it. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers dominating in Pittsburgh would be something else.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.